This episode contains language that may not be suitable for all listeners.
Previously on Sugarland.
Yes, my name is Reginald Moore. Because there wasn't any archaeological studies, the concerns are where these people buried.
The way he comes on, because he comes on so strong, gave some people in their mind sort of permission to dismiss him.
When some of the workers were backfilling a trench, they saw some bone fragments, and they'd been seeing agricultural remains and things like that the whole time. But there was something a little different about these bones.
I'm hearing from two different sources that they possibly found a grave out there, and the archaeologists are back out there today.
Crews working on a Fort Bend ISD building discovered an historic cemetery on those grounds.
It was February 2018 when Charles Dupree heard the news.
Initially, I got the call that said, "We found some bones," is what the way they framed it.
At the time, Dupree was superintendent of the Fort Bend Independent School District, which had just started construction on a special new school, the James Reese Career and Technical Center.
The police was called over, and they said, "Well, we think there may be animal remains, maybe cows or something, because they're very large." But, of course, we sent them to be analyzed. They came back, and they said, "No, these are human remains." And so that was kind of very much, okay, this is real.
This was exactly what local activist Reginald Moore had warned of. So before sending out a press release announcing the discovery, Dupree decided to notify Reggie personally.
I really wanted to keep him fully engaged, even if he didn't fully agree with everything. We wanted him to know.
And as per usual, Reggie immediately called his friend Jay Jenkins.
"Hey, Jay, Reg, man, give me a call back, man. They found 20-some bodies out there at that site where Fort Bend Independent School District, man. Give me a call back, man. This is fantastic news, okay? I'm excited. They found 20-some graves out there. Dr. Charles Dupree just called me today."
I feel very strongly that I was in place to deal with that as an African-American, and that the whole situation benefited because I brought that lens to every decision.
This is part two of Sugarland, an investigative podcast series presented by the Texas Newsroom. I'm Brittany Martin, an independent journalist based in Houston.
And I'm Naomi Reed, assistant professor of anthropology at Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas.
Dupree is tall, maybe 6'3". Bald with a full salt and pepper beard and a mellow NPR voice. His affect is gentle, but there's also a seriousness about him. He wanted to make it clear that he respected Reggie, even though they didn't always or even often agree.
I just never wanted him surprised, especially if it was something he may not like or may not fully supported. I wanted him to hear from me, this is what we're doing and this is why.
Dupree and Reggie initially met when the district was trying to decide where to build its new career and technical center. It was a project local parents had been pushing for since Dupree took the superintendent job in 2013.
Many members of our community said not every kid goes to college. They need skills. They need certifications that let them get out and earn a living wage.
So, after voters approved a bond package to fund the new school in 2014, the district started thinking about where it should go.
What you have to appreciate about Sugarland, Missouri City, really the entire Fort Bend school district, is it's almost built out right now. So if you need to build another school, you have a hard time finding sites.
Fort Bend ISD considered a few different plots, but knew the school needed to be somewhere central since it would be open to high schoolers from across the district.
That's what led them to choose the site where the remains of the Sugarland 95 were later found.
About that time is when I met Mr. Moore for the first time.
Reggie had been a vocal activist in the community for years, working tirelessly to draw attention to the graves of convicts he just knew were out there.
He called my office a few times, wasn't sure who he was. And then he came to a board meeting and kind of spoke publicly. And after that, we scheduled an opportunity to sit down and have a one-on-one conversation about what was on his mind.
Yeah, what was your first impression of him?
You know, it was hard to get a read. I mean, he was very clear about his passion about convict leasing, and it was very clear he had done extensive research and work and that he knew that there was a cemetery somewhere in that area. And so it initially was like, okay, I need to be able to discern what is the real story here, what is going on.
I feel like if I were in the district's shoes, Reggie's warnings would have at the very least given me pause. But Dupree told us that Reggie wasn't the only voice in his ear. Most people assumed that if there really were graves out there, they would have already been found.
We did not expect to find anything. There was no feeling about hoping we wouldn't or anything like that, but there wasn't an expectation either that we would. It was just a planning. If we do, we want to be prepared.
Fort Bend ISD, you'll remember, hired Goshawk Environmental Consulting to monitor construction, but they didn't find anything significant, so they left. Then they were called back in February when the first remains were spotted.
Obviously, after that, archaeologist Rain Clark and his team needed to take another look at the site. It took about a month for him to get all the new paperwork and permits in order. So they didn't start digging again until late March of 2018. Here's Rain describing what happened next to a room full of people at the Sam Houston Memorial Museum.
We found number two the next day on Thursday, first day of date. We found number three on Friday.
The crew paused briefly for the Easter weekend, then started digging again on Monday.
And we found six. And then Tuesday we found another six or eight. And it went on and on. And one day we found 15 burials in a single day.
It became very clear that this wasn't a backyard burial or a small family cemetery. This thing was huge.
Dupree emailed Fort Bend ISD's Board of Trustees saying he was working with the Texas Historical Commission to figure out what to do next. But he said, quote, "We do know that it will be necessary to seek a court order to move the remains."
This is really important to note. The district had already designed the whole school building, and part of it was supposed to sit right on top of all of these graves. So their plan from essentially day one was to move the bodies somewhere else.
Just 1 week after the cemetery's discovery was announced, the district's lawyers met with the city of Sugar Land. They wanted to discuss moving the bodies to a nearby cemetery the city owns.
It's called the Old Imperial Farm Cemetery. The historical marker there says it contains at least 31 marked graves of prisoners and guards.
It's about half a mile away from the James Reese Career and Technical Center. You can actually see the school from there.
Dupree assured Reggie that he would be included in the district's discussions about what to do next. So in mid-April, he invited Reggie to meet with Fort Bend ISD officials and their lawyers. Reggie's friend Jay came too.
I remember I drove out there. I was early. I went to Starbucks. I bought the paper because it was the front page of the paper that day.
In the years leading up to the Sugarland 95's discovery, Jay had worked with Reggie to shed light on the history of convict leasing in Texas. He now serves as president of the organization Reggie started, the Convict Leasing and Labor Project. Full disclosure, I serve on the group's board of directors as well. I joined in 2021. Actually, that's one of the first ways I was introduced to this whole story.
The Convict Leasing and Labor Project is also a financial contributor to this series.
Anyway, back to what happened right before the meeting.
Reg and I met in the parking lot, and he said, "Well, what are we going to do?" And I said, "Reg, you ask for whatever the fuck you want. I don't know that they'll give it to you, but you have earned the right to ask for whatever you want on this." And we didn't even get that far before they were telling us that there was no way that they could have known about the bodies and that there was no way they could have possibly anticipated this happening during construction.
This surprised Jay and Reggie. They'd been here before in these same rooms with these same people, warning them explicitly about this exact possibility.
They were more concerned with getting Reggie to sign off on letting them move the bodies and continue construction than they were about actually paying these people any respect.
As much as Reggie appreciated that he was finally being heard, he remained skeptical.
Just after he met with Dupree, Fort Bend ISD issued a press release saying they appreciated Reggie's guidance and had invited him to tour the site. Reggie called Jay.
Hey, Jay. Reggie Moore. Hey, man, Fort Bend and the school just made another posting last night after we got through meeting, saying some things about what I met with them or whatever, and 979 graves. So they found additional 9 graves since we talked, okay, since I met with them yesterday. So now this thing is getting open and getting bigger and bigger as we speak. So that's where we at, Jay. Give me a shout. Give me a call.
Jay worried the district was using Reggie. Like, they wanted people to think they were on the same side and always had been.
It was rushed to go from the sneers that Reggie was getting to, we're going to build this beautiful park around the cemetery and make it so you can be the guardian. It wasn't, Reggie, what do you want? It was, Reggie, we're going to do this for you.
But that's not what Reggie wanted. Days before that meeting, he told a reporter for Texas Monthly the district should stop construction and preserve the cemetery right where it was. He said, quote, "That would be a sad thing if they disinter those graves and remove them like that. They've disrespected these people so much, and they're trying to disrespect them again."
But again, Reggie's interests weren't the only ones Superintendent Dupree had to weigh.
The attorney said, "You cannot, district cannot maintain a cemetery. So what are your options at that point? Either you leave it alone, but even if you left it alone, at that point, it's a cemetery. Someone's got to manage it. So if we can't manage it, then we had worked out an arrangement with the city to exhume and reinter the bodies in another place."
But that's actually not true. There isn't a law that expressly says a school district can't own and maintain a cemetery it finds on its land. It seems the district's lawyers interpreted the law differently, basing their argument on parts of the law that didn't apply to the district's situation and overlooking other parts that did. Still, it's a claim they made over and over and over again to explain why these bodies had to be moved. In Texas, if you want to remove remains from a cemetery, you have to get permission from the deceased's next of kin. So, for example, if you wanted to dig up my grandfather's body and move it somewhere else, you'd have to get permission from his closest living adult relative, which, in this case, would be my grandma. But if she wasn't alive, you'd have to go to my dad or one of his siblings. If they were also dead, then you'd have to ask me or one of my cousins, and so on.
But how do you get permission from someone's next of kin if you don't actually know who that person is?
Well, that was hurdle number one. After the first few bones were found, Rain Clark knew he needed to add a different kind of archaeologist to his team, one who specialized in handling human remains. So he contacted Katrina Banks Whitley, an independent bioarchaeologist based in North Texas.
It's not an uncommon call that I would actually receive.
This is Katrina.
She's pretty no-nonsense, both in her approach to work and in her appearance. Her straight blonde hair is neat and hits her right at the shoulder.
And was just asked to come down and take a look at the remains so that I could, you know, help them try to figure out who this individual was.
Despite the fact that Reggie had been telling everyone who would listen that this was a convict cemetery from the convict leasing era, Rain, Katrina, and the school district said it was still too soon to say.
Honestly, I try to make sure that I don't really know anything about the people first, because that makes it to where I am just looking at this individual and working with this individual and letting them tell me their story.
In June 2018, 4 months after the first bones were found, a judge gave Katrina permission to exhume the bodies and study them. She pulled each set of remains out of the ground, placed them in labeled cardboard boxes, and brought them into a mobile lab on site for further examination.
These individuals were in clay and the clay sticks. And so we had trained teams that washed each and every one of the bones and laid them out to dry. And then from there, I would do the analysis.
Katrina made a list of all the characteristics she attributed to each skeleton. We have a copy right here. Take burial number 6, for example.
Okay. It says that this person was biologically male, about 5 feet and 5 inches tall, between the ages of 20 and 30 years old when he died, and black.
When I interviewed her, Katrina explained she could tell all these things based on the length, shape, and markings on a person's bones.
So it was only as we were moving through this process and we were continually finding males, and I was continually identifying individuals that were of African-American ancestry, it started to become very clear what it is we were working with. So that is one thing that is very—
Which initially gave us pause. Katrina is white. She told us she'd never worked on an African-American burial site before, and she didn't have any specialized training in African diaspora scholarship. So when she said she could just look at people's bones and can tell they were black, we both wondered, is that even possible? It felt a little too close to phrenology or eugenics or some pseudoscientific racism.
Yeah, there was just so much that we didn't know. So we asked around and found some other experts to explain things a little more thoroughly.
In short, it's all about probabilities.
So just looking at a skeleton and seeing a trait that's statistically more likely to appear in an African-American person doesn't necessarily mean that person is African-American. It just means it's more likely.
These are frequencies. They're not rules. They're trends.
That's Phoebe Stubblefield, a forensic anthropologist working to locate and identify some of those killed in the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre. It's estimated hundreds of residents were murdered when a white mob destroyed Tulsa's thriving African-American district. Ultimately, Stubblefield and Katrina were more or less in agreement about how these types of determinations are made. But Stubblefield, who is black, said the ability to gain the trust of the black community is one of the major benefits of hiring an African-American archaeologist to lead research on African-American sites.
You may avoid some of the obvious conflicts of, can I trust white people? I still see echoes of that or just full-on effects of that with Tulsa. You know, like if the black archaeologist says we exhumed 20 graves, then it's 20 graves. But if the white archaeologist says that, they go, what are you hiding?
Stubblefield told us making these sorts of biological and racial determinations based on skeletons gets a lot more difficult if the remains aren't well preserved.
If there's only one trait preserved, I just say suggestive of African ancestry. And if there's not enough traits preserved, I just say indeterminate.
The same is true for determining a person's age, height, and biological sex. With a population this old, it's no surprise every grave wasn't perfectly preserved. Burial 80, for instance, seemed like an anomaly because Katrina listed the person as female. But her analysis doesn't contain much other information. Instead of giving an age range, it just says adult. There's no estimate of height or race, and no teeth were found.
That individual was very fragmented, and we didn't have a whole lot of that individual.
That's Katrina again.
So we were having to rely on circumference of some of the long bones to try to tell us if we're looking at her male or female. And the problem with that, too, is we don't know if this was a younger child. So it's something that when we kind of look at, say, percentages of accuracy, it was lower on the percentage of accuracy.
So it's entirely possible that person might actually be male, which would make more sense historically since the convict camps in this area were likely not co-ed. But we just don't know.
5 months after the initial discovery, Forpin ISD announced that a preliminary analysis suggested that these individuals may be people involved in the convict lease system. Katrina said in addition to their biological characteristics, their bones showed that this was a group of people who did a lot of hard labor.
Scientists say all appear to have a muscular build with some misshapen bones, indicating repetitive movements and hard labor. The Texas Historical Commission wants the public to contact them if they think they might be descendants of those discovered at this unmarked cemetery.
But no one contacted them. At that point, Forpin ISD had been negotiating with city officials all summer and finally struck a deal. The school district would pay to move and rebury the bodies in the old Imperial Farm Cemetery, and the city would pay for new grave markers and cemetery maintenance.
Remember, though, they still didn't have permission to move them. But the law says if you can't get consent from a deceased person's next of kin, permission can be granted by a judge. So, Forpin ISD's lawyers prepared to make their case in court. It was the fall of 2018, and construction on Forpin ISD's new Career and Technical Center had been underway for nearly a year.
If they wanted to finish the building on time, the district knew they needed to make a compelling case to a judge to allow them to move the remains of the Sugarland 95. The district's lawyer, Robert Scamardo, spent the fall semester working to finalize the deal with the city to rebury the bodies at the old Imperial Farm Cemetery.
Finally, after months of emails and meetings, Scamardo found himself sitting around a conference table at City Hall.
It was September 2018, and this was the first meeting of a community task force convened by the city of Sugarland to discuss the cemetery.
Good evening. I'm Robert Scamardo. I'm the general counsel for Fort Bend ISD.
He was joined by Reggie, Jay, Rain, and Katrina, representatives from the County Historical Commission, the Department of Criminal Justice, and various academics. After everyone introduced themselves, Scamardo explained the district's plan.
It's the district's belief that that would be to petition the court for authority to reinter them. We believe that the old Imperial Farm Cemetery is a perfect location. It's historically linked, it's nearby, and there are details, of course, that still need to be worked out. But that's the intention. There is no.
While Scamardo used his time to emphasize the district's construction timeline, Rain and Katrina explained that DNA analysis could be performed on the remains to identify the Sugarland 95. But because of their age, they'd have to use a different process than what we typically see on TV.
Isotope analysis and DNA analysis, you can extract material from the teeth of the individuals, an incisor and a molar.
Rain said both tests require removing bones, like the teeth he mentioned, from the graves and destroying them.
And to do that, Fort Bend ISD had to, once again, get permission.
The purview to allow that process is not with the district court. It's with the Texas Historical Commission.
A spokeswoman for Fort Bend ISD told the group that the district had already submitted a formal request.
And we received a response from the Texas Historical Commission basically indicating that while it seemed like there were some stakeholders who felt like destructive analysis would be helpful, they were hesitant, I would say, to grant us permission until we had done some sort of process through which we could attempt to identify any living heirs or descendants of these people.
So to recap, the law says Fort Bend ISD can't move the bodies without permission from descendants. Fort Bend ISD says we can't know who descendants are without doing a DNA analysis. The state says you can't do a DNA analysis without permission from descendants, which is how they were planning to find descendants.
It's a very circular argument.
The answer was not no. The answer was, we hear what you're saying, but we don't want to grant permission to do this until you've done a really thorough job of getting all stakeholder input before we allow you to destroy this material.
So that's why they held this task force meeting. They needed to get community sign-off, essentially. But of the 20 people sitting around the table, Reggie was one of only four Black people. Most everyone else was white, and that gave the city manager pause.
We do not have adequate representation this evening to come to that conclusion.
He said he wasn't ready to sign off on any plans without a more diverse showing of community support. But this was not welcome news for the school district, who badly wanted to stick to their construction schedule. Scamardo, Fort Bend ISD's lawyer, pushed the issue.
So you said a moment ago that you're not yet prepared to make a recommendation about reburial. I'm wondering if you would entertain, like, maybe a smaller group of us, or what the plan is between now and the next 2 weeks. I mean, I know you called the task force, but Sue doesn't. Is he the only one that has to?
No doubt about it. And when I envisioned creating the task force, I was thinking at the time that this was going to be a pretty straight process. It's more complicated than that. And we have to listen to everybody's perspective and make sure that we are being properly respectful to everyone.
It really seemed like the city was hitting the pause button.
But then Rain circled back to the DNA issue and gave this rousing speech.
I failed to truly identify the significance of DNA analysis of this population. We don't know who's there until we dig into the archival record. We have an opportunity to put a name to these individuals. This is a completely unique situation, and to not do DNA analysis, it would be a travesty to reinter these individuals.
That's very good. Thank you.
And it seems like that was enough to change the city manager's mind.
Does anyone on the task force disagree with the concept of the DNA testing? Anyone? Okay, so we'll gather that information and we'll share it with the school district. The school district then can add it to their request, hopefully satisfying the Historical Commission. Everyone in agreement? Say aye.
Aye.
Okay.
And just like that, the meeting was over. Reggie left feeling pretty good.
He was excited about the DNA test. Rain and Katrina estimated they could finish collecting their samples and preparing the bodies for reburial before the end of the year.
But in hindsight, that meeting raised some red flags. The first was feasibility. It's not enough to just say, yeah, we want to test their DNA. Who was going to do the analysis? And where? Who was going to pay for it?
None of those questions were answered that night.
Plus, there was the much larger issue of consent. Should it really have been up to the people sitting around that table to decide that bones should be removed from these graves and destroyed? To have the DNA of African Americans tested and used for all kinds of things, including and beyond identification?
Katrina spent nearly 2 whole minutes during the meeting listing all the research that could be done using this genetic material. Here's just a bit.
We can look at genetic heritage and track their lineal descent back to Africa. We can look at sickle cell anemia. We'll be able to look at if they are carrying a sickle trait and at the pathological conditions and the health conditions of the individuals. And that research can actually be turned over and be used by modern medical professionals to help children and family members and people today. And
this is okay, so as an academic, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with research. But Black communities have a long history of being exploited by modern science in this country. The academic community is only now beginning to reckon with the racist practices of collecting the remains of Black and Indigenous communities that fill their research labs. My concern was that science and the potential of helping, quote, people today was being prioritized over the humanity of the 95 and bringing them justice.
Tulsa researcher Phoebe Seppelfield believes that having a Black researcher lead studies on an African-American cemetery increases the likelihood that things like that won't happen.
In my generation, you know, I'm getting up there, and when I entered academia, that's how we rolled. Oh, let's get a bone collection, bone hoarding, as I like to call it. And it's just not needed.
Today, people can consent to donate their bodies to science after they die, and families can grant scientists consent to study the ancient bones of their ancestors, too. There's no one right way to respect the dead. But informed consent respects the living.
You know, I'm not trying to create a database here. All I'm trying to do is get these people ID'd and sent home. I want to give their families a chance to reconnect with these people and their own history.
But as the task force members would soon realize, the Sugar Land 95 wouldn't be reconnected with their history anytime soon.
Next time on Sugarland.
I recently served on your task force with regards to the Sugarland 95. I resigned last week before the last meeting because after noticing an interlocal agreement, it appeared that the task force had been formed only to rubber stamp what the city and Fort Bend ISD had already agreed to.
I remember Reggie and I sitting at Reggie's house for 3 hours before that meeting, just going through everything, trying to figure out like something.
They were giving mixed signals. We don't know who's here, but we do know who's here.
I think they were really trying to get through this without identifying any descendants. And just wanted to get those bodies back in the ground and get that school built.
You cannot allow the school district to have a one-sided, dark deal without the light and the transparency of the district court's approval.
Sugarland is a production of the Texas Newsroom and was completed with the support of a grant from Columbia University's Ira A. Littman Center for Journalism and Civil and Human Rights, with funding provided by Arnold Ventures, and a grant from the Convict Leasing and Labor Project. Sugarland is written and reported by Brittany Martin and Naomi Reed. Our editor is Rachel Osier Lindley. Engineering and sound design by Jacob Rosati. Fact-checking by Billy Brennan. Audio editing by Bennett Smith. Music by Jerron Marshall. Recording engineering by Jake Perlman. Production help from Rafa Fariha. The Texas Newsroom is a public radio journalism collaboration that includes NPR, KERA in North Texas, Houston Public Media, KUT in Austin, Texas Public Radio in San Antonio, and other stations across the state. Corey McLagan is the statewide managing editor. The Texas Newsroom received support for Sugarland from Frontline's Local Journalism Initiative, which is funded by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Visit sugarlandpodcast.com to learn more about everything we discuss in this series.